Welcome back. Welcome back to the Patrick Podcast. Patrick Chappelle here. We're back at it. We had a little break, which is fine. You know why it's fine? Because this is my thing. And if I want to take a break, people, we'll take a break. But we're glad to be back. And I think this next episode you're going to hear today, you're going to really, really enjoy. We get to talk to Rashid Walker. And his story, life, energy, passion, positivity is so contagious that you're going to feel it across the airwaves. So I'm excited for you to hear all about Rashid and what he's up to and where he's been in life. And I think you're really going to enjoy what happens in this episode. Before we get into that, and before we hear from Ben and see what he's been up to, I want to make a quick note at the top. This is coming out, and we are still here in Nashville in the aftermath of a tornado that has devastated the lives of families and of individuals, of business owners, of employees, of a whole city. And we're also in the midst of coronavirus. There's a lot happening in our world. And my encouragement to myself, and not only to myself, but to all of us is don't put yourself in the pit of despair. For those of you that live in Nashville, listen to this. Let's feel the feelings, okay? Things were lost. Lives were lost with the tornado. And we need to mourn and mourn well. And that's okay. But we don't need to stay there. We need to keep moving forward as best we can. I know that's easier said than done, but I think that's the way that we have to move forward, is to keep moving forward. With the coronavirus, I want to say, if you're a naysayer, not helpful. If you're literally having a freak out and you're losing your and losing all of your like being and self and like rational thoughts, also not helpful. This thing is for real, okay? But we don't need to live in fear, but we don't need to live in unwise ways. There's a way for us to live in the middle. To be cautious, to wash our hands, to be careful in our interactions, to take breaks and to slow down. It's okay to take this thing seriously. It is also to know that like we still should be out doing our life. Still be with friends, be with family, go out in public. Don't live in fear, but don't also be someone who is just reckless, okay? Because we care for those that are vulnerable for us, are vulnerable in our lives, whether that's the elderly or children or people with pre-existing conditions. And what I've learned from both of these things, what I'm learning from both of these things is that this is an opportunity for us to be more communal. For us to be more about each other and to be less about just me and mine. So let us truly be people who care for our cities, for our neighborhoods, for our country, for the world. Okay, little serious note there. Ben, what's up? How's it going?
It's going all right. I appreciate what you just said, man. I really do. I have the tendency to get really bummed out by what's happening in the world.
Yeah.
Just trying to work on how to process, you know.
Yeah.
Get in a better habit. But on a brighter note, man, just been busy working on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you produced some new records.
Yeah, well,
right? What are the two main ones that we all need to be checking out?
I think I've mentioned it here before, but Riley Buck's EP,
Really good, y'all.
It's out, and yeah, thank you. We're really, really happy with it. Just search Riley Buck on whatever platform of music you listen to. It's available everywhere. The EP is called Miles and Miles, and there's 5 songs on it that we're really happy with. We already have a new song for her that we're gonna hopefully get out soon. And then additionally, this technically isn't a new song that I've produced, but I did produce it. There's just a music video for it now that's really, really good.
Yeah.
An artist named Ellie Ivory. It's ELE space Ivory. Ellie has a song called Lazy Boys that I produced that came out within the last year, I think. I can't remember.
Dope.
But there's a new music video for it it's amazing. It's really beautiful, that's really awesome. Well done, really good visuals. And they premiered that video at the premiere for the new Jeremy Camp movie, whatever it's called.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's fun. It's really cool. So go give that some love, especially because the team that did the video, I don't know them, but they did an amazing job. They really deserve to get views. So
dope.
That's exciting.
We'll check those out.
Yeah.
All right, people. You've heard from... We're back. We're back at it. Go check it out. Those records. And also, have fun with this episode. Share it. Give it to friends, family members, coworkers. And yeah, you know where to find me and us. We're on Instagram and I'm on Twitter personally. So if you want to give a shout out, please feel free to do so. And if you're not following us already on Spotify or iTunes or whatever platform you do, subscribe to that. And if you're able to leave a comment or stars, whatever, hook that up. That'd be awesome. That helps us get up the charts. All right. Check it out. See ya. Rasheed, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Wow. I'm excited for this interview. This is going to be a lot of fun, I think.
I'm very excited, too. Yeah. Look forward to it. When you hit me up the other day, I was like, oh, yeah. Licking my chops. I'm ready for it. Honored to be a guest, say the least.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So, there's a lot I want to get to, but I don't want to get us there too quickly. So, just kind of give us, you know, are you where born and raised? Kind of like, just give us just a touch of the background, and I'm going to take us somewhere.
My name is Rasheed Walker, born and raised in Nashville, Tennessee.
That's right.
Grew up here, lived here. I went to college in Tuskegee University in Alabama. After I finished college, I came back here. Then I moved to Atlanta for a couple months to live with one of my cousins. Then I moved back to Nashville, and I've just been putting everything together since then.
Right. So, grew up in Nashville. What part of town? What did you grow up in?
I guess you would say like Northeast. Not East Nashville, but not North. Northeast, like in the Rivergate area. Because yeah. I went to Hunter's Lane.
Oh, yeah.
So that's like kind of a weird elbow pocket.
Yeah, that's
of
right.
Outside of town, you know, so...
That's great. So, grew up in Nashville, and so you, I'm sure you have all kinds of perspectives and insights on what you think about the growth of Nashville.
Oh, yeah. When, you know, some people view it, I view it as a good thing, because I'm from here. And I remember,
right.
You know, I lived here my whole life, if you exclude college.
Right.
You know, I remember when it was nothing to do.
Yeah.
In Nashville.
Yeah.
It was nothing fun stuff to do, nothing cool to do, or it was a rarity when cool stuff would come to town. And now you look up, it's a different show, a concert,
yeah,
or a tournament.
Yeah.
So I like the growth of Nashville. Now, granted, the traffic is kind of bad, and the cost of living has went up. Right. And also opportunities for, you know, African-Americans has kind of swindled down a little bit.
Right.
But I think we can swing the pendulum a little bit and get it on the right momentum. But overall, I think the growth of Nashville has been very beneficiary for me and others as well.
Yeah. So take me to, I knew that you went to Tuskegee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could have chosen a lot of different schools to go to.
Mm-hmm.
But you chose Tuskegee in Alabama.
Right.
Why that one over... And there's a lot of schools. There's a lot. There's even a lot locally. You could have stayed locally. But so why? What was the... I'm always interested in like what motivates people to make those kind of decisions.
So originally, I wanted to go to Vanderbilt. I did everything to go to Vanderbilt. They got a long application process. I originally wanted to go to Vanderbilt. And there was a couple other state schools that was here. Then it was like two schools in Atlanta. But... Right. Tuskegee actually came in late in the game and offered me a lot.
Really?
But on top of that, my family is from Tuskegee.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So my dad, he's from Tuskegee, Alabama. All my uncles and aunts are from Tuskegee, or they either went to college in Tuskegee or they're from Tuskegee. And yeah. I had three cousins at the time going to Tuskegee as well. So when Tuskegee was on the radar, they wasn't number one on my college list.
Sure.
But when Vanderbilt kind of fell through, they said I didn't do one part of the application, you know, one essay of the application.
Right.
You know, I had Tennessee Tech, MTSU, Clark Atlanta, and I can't remember the other school that I could have went to. Then Tuskegee came in, and they, you know, threw a nice package for me to go there. I said, oh, yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to Tuskegee, Alabama.
That's amazing. And it was a good experience.
Best experience of my life.
Now, that's a historically black college.
Yes.
A university. College is part of that group, a collection of schools that many folks now know about. And I think that's amazing. Now I know that you were, at least in part of your life, you were a teacher, right?
Yes.
You were a math teacher, right?
Right.
Now, did you study math in school?
No.
So how did you end up being a math teacher?
I learned on the fly. No, the thing is, so it was like 12th grade math, but this was the math for the students that didn't pass it when they first took it. So this was just this was bridge math. So it was a combination of all the other math subjects in one. And so some of the stuff I still remember from college. Then the other stuff I just had to learn on the fly, get help from the other math teachers in the school after work and all of that stuff.
Now, but see, some people would, if they said, here's the option I have for you for a job, is to be a math teacher. Most people are like, well, I'll just find something else to do. So like why, what, so I guess what was the major in school? And then what eventually ended up you saying yes to that versus doing something else completely different?
My major was business, sales and marketing, and business administration. So I got two degrees. Well, I had two majors. So not like a bachelor's and a master's, but two bachelor's degrees when I graduated Tuskegee. When I came home, I couldn't, you know, I was looking to get into sports, like sports marketing, sports management, work with an agent or something like that. And it just didn't happen.
Right.
And then I ran into my old track coach out and about somewhere. His name is Dr. Ollich. And he was the assistant principal at Maplewood. He's still there now. He's the assistant principal at Maplewood. Wow. He asked what I was doing. We just talking. I said, man, I'm not, you know, I'm working at a tutoring program, uh-huh. but, you know, nothing really heavy right now.
Uh-huh.
He was like, you should get into schools. You should sub, you know, just be a substitute teacher, and then I'll be able to put something together for you later on.
Wow.
And so that's what I did. You know, that's how I got into it. I didn't have anything else, and you know, I always liked working with the youth, and so it kind of went perfect, wow. into his hands.
That's perfect. So you've mentioned this kind of already a little bit, but sports has been a big part of your life.
Oh yeah. So, like very, very big part.
Right. So track, basketball, all like I'm sure there's other sports that you probably played throughout your life. How did that come about? Like, was that just something like in your family's DNA? And it's like, we play sports. Like, some families are about that. Some families are like academics. Just something that naturally just came to you?
I'm grateful and blessed enough in my family, academics and sports have been big.
Right.
But it come natural because my daddy, he's a legendary baseball player in Tuskegee. If he didn't have to go to Vietnam, he would have played Major League Baseball. Like, he has all the records. Some might be broke now, but at the time, for a long time, him and his brothers had all of the baseball records in Tuskegee, Alabama.
Wow.
I had a cousin that played 10 years in the NFL. Wow. His name's Frank Walker. He played with the Cowboys. Most importantly, that's my favorite team. So I'm not going to mention the other teams. Yeah, not going to mention the other teams.
Okay.
But,
You've made your stand. That's all right.
So, you know, sports has just been in my life, and I give credit to my mama because she introduced me to basketball. You know, and nobody in my family played basketball that was, like, really good at basketball.
Because it was like baseball. Baseball was a sport.
Baseball and football. Baseball was number one because my daddy and my brothers, not my brothers, my daddy and his brothers, were good at it. And my brothers, they played football. They were good at Hillwood and stuff like that. But nobody was just really basketball. And my mom, she liked basketball. She played basketball in high school. She went to McGavick in the 70s.
Wow.
And so she just introduced me to basketball. And that's when the love and craze of sports came from that.
So what was it about basketball that just clicked with you that you loved more, especially now as you look back and reflect on, because what you do now is heavily involved in basketball? What is it about that particular sport versus, it's not saying that like baseball or football or any other sport is not as good or not a good sport, but some reason basketball really connects to you. How would you describe why
that
is?
Probably because my mama could play it with me.
Okay.
Because she could show me how to dribble, show me how to shoot.
Right.
You know, then eventually I got better than her quickly. That was not a question, but she could actually do it with me. She could take me to the court. She, you know, it's different than playing football or baseball, you know, but basketball, it can be one-on-one all day long.
Exactly.
You know, and that's how basketball, and then Michael Jordan happened.
Yeah.
And that's what really drove it through the roof. I'm a big Chicago Bulls fan, but now, you know, I like a lot of other players and other, you know, teams in a sense, but to the core, I'm a Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan, B.J. Armstrong fan.
Yeah. So I wonder, this is just a random question. I wonder, even when it comes to basketball, what it appears is that of all the sports, basketball really does have fans who are fans of players, not necessarily fans of teams.
Yeah.
So why do you think that is? Why is it, you know, it's not that people aren't fans of players in NFL and in, you know, hockey and in baseball, but it feels like in basketball, it's like people are loyal to the player and not so much the team. People are for sure loyal to teams. I mean, Spike Lee is the most loyal Knicks fan and still for whatever reason. But, I mean, you know, so why do you think – I've noticed that over the years.
Oh, because recently a lot of players switched teams.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Paul George.
Right.
He was with the Pacers. Yeah. Then he went to the Thunder.
Right.
Now he's with the Clippers. That's within a 4-year span. Three and a half, 4-year span. You know, Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
He was with the Thunder. He was with the Warriors. Now he's with the Nets.
Yeah.
You know, right now, two of my favorite players, James Harden, Lou Williams. Lou's played on like 6 teams. I've never really been fans of his team up until now. I like the Clippers right now.
Yeah.
And James Harden, I didn't really become a big fan of his until he got to Houston in 2012. So I like the Rockets. I went to a lot of Rockets games last year, but I'm not it's kind of hard. And I tell people, you cannot like the player and not like the team because his success is a direct result of how the team does.
Sure, yeah.
Like, you want to see your player do good, and and while he's doing good, he or she doing good, you want to see that team win.
Right.
Because if the team's not winning, the player's not doing that good.
Right.
You know, but as of recent, that's how it come about, you know, because a lot of players, you know, have switched teams so often. If you look back at the 90s, nobody really switched teams.
Yeah. Jordan just played for,
You know, free agency existed, but nobody really switched teams. Like Reggie Miller never switched. Kobe never switched. Bird never switched. Right. Jordan switched late. Pippen switched late.
Right.
Kareem, he did two teams, but they were so early on. Dr. J, Charles Barkley. So, I mean, Charles Barkley, that's my second favorite player. He played with the Sixers, Suns, and Rockets.
Right.
You know, so it wasn't that common of switching teams so often.
Huh. Okay, so take me back to teaching math in high school, right?
Right.
What did you learn in that, like, that season of your life? Like, what was the thing that surprised you that you learned about, like, being a teacher that showed up every morning and had a classroom and had these students? Like, what did you discover about yourself or about just that kind of work, that kind of...
I learned how to connect with different type of people, different personalities on different levels.
Yeah.
You know, that's the main thing I took from it, because I got kids that like sports. I got kids that like bad stuff. I got kids that don't like anything. But in every class, you had to find a way to connect with the whole group.
Right.
So everything would be fun and go smooth. You got to check the temperature of everybody. And that's one thing that it taught me, of how to walk into a room and check the temperature of everybody to see how it is going to go. Some people come in hype. You kind of either calm them down a little bit, or you get on that same level, but not where it's out of reach, but to where the momentum is the same. The mojo and the energy is matched. And if some people come in low momentum, you know, low energy, stuff like that, you kind of got to ease into it to open them up, wake them up, and break into it. Because I would always start the class with like an icebreaker. So once everybody blood flowing a little bit, then we can get into the lesson.
Right.
But if everybody is not paying attention, you know, it's kind of hard to get into it. So that's one of the main things I try to find different ways on how to connect with different people of all walks of life, all ethnicities, and make it fun.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so let's kind of keep going a little bit. Let's talk about probably one of the things that I don't know if it's the most impactful thing in your life that happened. It may be, but let's talk about the thing that really was life changing, I would say, for you.
Oh yeah,
in a big time way. And so you were in a very I don't even know what the level word, but a very intense, awful car accident.
Oh yeah.
That, like, what they said, it gave you 20% chance?
Yeah, 20% chance. Yeah, I mean, you know, that was the most impactful and biggest thing that happened in my life to date. I'm grateful that I made it through. It was a very eye-opening experience.
Yeah.
It taught me a lot about myself. I learned a lot about the health and healthcare world and all
I
that
bet
stuff.
You did.
And,
yeah.
Learned a lot about other people as well. But, you know, I'm thankful that it happened, because it's opened a whole new pathway to life that I'm in now.
Yeah.
And I'm able to impact others in a positive manner through what happened with the car accident, what I've learned, and how I can be of help, you know, to others as well. And I always tell people, I'm an open book. Whatever you want to know in regards to it, just ask me. I tell you every step of the way. I openly talk about it, because I'm not ashamed of it. I'm proud. I'm not going to say I'm proud that destruction and I, you know, hurt someone else in a car accident, but, you know, I'm not ashamed of what happened and how I recovered from it.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things I would be curious about, but one of the things that came to mind was, you know, I know how so many of us, like, live our lives. Like, they're just so, for a lot of us, very self-centered, very much about what we want and how we want to get it and all this kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, like, life for you, like, in the days before that happened, like, you had no idea that was going to happen in your life.
Right.
And then that happened. So what where were you at mentally, socially, spiritually, even like who were you before that happened? And then of course afterwards we have the person we see sitting here today.
Oh yeah.
But like what was one of the big things that like that after this, after we came through that kind of thing that totally changed in my life?
I was the same. So at that time, it was March. It was like mid to late March. So I was going to a lot of high school basketball games. You know, I was at Weiss Creek at the time, and they was headed to the state tournament. They was in the district, the regional. So I was going to support the students and other kids right. that I mentor. I was planning for the pro-am, just getting everything together for the second year. At the time, it was going into the second year. Just working out, just looking forward to the upcoming months, getting rest. I didn't really do nothing. I really wasn't. Nothing was off track. I was just steadily planning and meeting with people and hanging out. But nothing just, and I was very God-centered.
Right.
I was at church every Sunday.
Right.
Bible study when I could make it.
Right.
And so that's where I was at. Because I was, how old was I? 26. I was 26 at the time. Yeah, because, I was 26 at the time. So. Yeah, that's where I was at. I was just, doing a lot with the kids, with the youth, going to, because a lot of kids asked me to come to their games and see them play. So I was going to a lot of high school games. I was planning for the second year of the pro-am, looking to make it better. I was at church. I was researching. I was studying. That's what I was, watching a lot of basketball, going to, because one of my best friends, John Jenkins, he was with the Suns at the time. So I was going to a couple Suns games.
Oh, nice.
I was traveling a lot, so that's where I was at before the accident.
So it wasn't even that, you had this radical change in personality in what you did post having this incident. It was just like you were already kind of this positive, kind of like working hard, doing the creating things, helping people out. And so I guess really, just post it. I guess probably the biggest question is, what was it like to kind of keep that through this healing process? Because I know some people could go through this and say,
yeah,
I'm out. I'm just going to change. I'm going to be.
The biggest thing is that it got magnified because some people saw what I was doing prior to the accident.
Right.
And when the accident happened, more eyes was on me. And then they actually just saw what I was doing. And what the accident did, it added like, man, 200 levels of hustle to it. Because, like I said, I only had a 20% chance to make it. So to let you know the condition, the state my body was in.
Right.
And so I was determined to get back healthy. Because a lot of people depended on me. Not more so financially, but after the first year of the National Pro-Am, that was the talk of the town.
Yeah.
People looked forward to it. A lot of kids looked, a lot of high school students and some middle school at the time, they would just, looked to me as mentorship, advice, stuff like that. A lot of guys that I knew played professional in the NFL or NBA, I would always send them little text messages before the games, just to get them zoned in, stuff like that. So I just knew it was a lot of people counting on me to get back.
Yeah.
And in the midst of that, I was working from the hospital bed. My mouth was wired shut, face broke. I couldn't walk, but I was still getting stuff done, in the midst of recovery. And so that's what, just took it to another level. Like people were like, how the hell did he do that? How did the pro-am still kick off on time? And he was on life support 3 months ago.
Right.
That was just because if God gave me a second chance, there's nothing I can't do.
Right.
I made it off life support. I learned how to walk again. I got my weight back. I got part of my weight back. I was a different person in a physical standpoint.
Sure.
But the hustle was still the same. The mindset was still the same. No, I wasn't taking no for an answer or I can't do it or whatever. It was just going to be more difficult. But I was still the same person true to the core.
Wow.
I lost like 60 pounds, walking skeleton, hair all over my head, hair all over my face, but I was still about my business. I was still the same guy, radiating positive energy. You know, I was in a wheelchair, but I told my mom, I said, I don't want nobody to touch this wheelchair. Just help me get out the car, and I'll roll myself to every. I had like 4 doctor's appointments a week, you know, and each time I would go, I had like 2 or 3 appointments a day. So I was rolling all through Vanderbilt, you know, and then I graduated to a walker, and then, you know, the walking boot, but I just stayed the same. Whatever I did prior to the accident, it just got magnified even more. It just, more people saw it, and I went harder at it.
So where do you think this drive to hustle the way that you hustle, to have this positive energy like you have, like, who do you link as like this? This is the reason that I have this hustle, that I have this positive outlook and energy in my life. Like, who gets the cred for that? Who is the one that you say, these are the men and women that like help me do and be this kind of guy?
Well, first and foremost, you know, got to give credit to God, because without him, none of this would be possible. You know, a lot of it wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't have had the second chance, but prior to the second chance, he just always made a way for me. You know, I'm grateful for that. My mother, she always, you know, told me to be confident, stuff like that. Myself, I give credit to myself. And this is not to sound arrogant, you know, I've been growing up, I never made a basketball team.
Really?
Ever. And I, like I said, I'm okay with saying that because I have nothing to hide.
Wow.
I am one of the best shooters in Nashville. Strictly jump shooter.
Yeah.
One of the best. A lot of people know this. But, you know, at the time, there's a lot of politics in play.
Yeah. Always is.
And my cousin, he's a star player, Jeremiah Crutcher. He was, you know, all state. You know, he was point guard, went to Tennessee State. He's head coach at John Early Middle Magnet now.
Yeah.
But I always, you know, I always got the short end of the stick. So I always felt that I had to do more than the next person to be recognized or to be better. And so I never let the disappointment or the shortcoming take a toll on me. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to act like I wasn't hurt, but, you know, it helped push the drive. And I got a short list of people who have been my inspirations.
Yeah, let's hear that.
My uncle Cedric Walker, he started the very first rap tour, like hip hop tour.
What?
Yes, it's called the Fresh Festival. Him and Russell Simmons back in 1983 started the very first rap tour.
That's wild.
With, you know, Run DMC, yes. Beastie Boys,
yeah.
Houdini. LL Cool J came on in the third year, and many others. I don't want to keep naming people off because I can't remember them all.
Right.
And he now, then in 1994, he started the Universal Circus.
Wow.
And because he's always had a dream of, as a kid, having his own circus. And, you know, he's been one of my biggest inspirations. Brian Williams, you know, of Cash Money Records, you know, one of the co-founders.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people is not too fond of his business practices.
You don't say.
but I got to say, listen, you got to hear me out.
Okay, I'm listening.
When he started out, his determination was so strong, he told you, we're going to be the biggest label in the game. This is 1998.
Oh, yeah.
This is before the blow up happened. Then it happened. You know, Gucci Mane. He's one of my biggest because he went to jail in 2013. Yeah. He was a mess. He came out in 2016. And took the world by storm. And, you know, and that was the year that my life-changing event happened. You know, March 26, 2016. So that was our year of bounce back. And look where he's at now. My cousin Frank Walker, he got drafted in the NFL. He went to Tuskegee University as well, Division II small school. And he ended up making it 10 years in the NFL. Amazing. So that's big inspiration. Deion Sanders. Floyd Mayweather, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Jay-Z, the fictional character Batman, and Rick Ross. I say Batman because he's a superhero with no superpowers.
Right.
He was just good. He was just, you know, talented, and he had a lot of cool gadgets. Lived in a big house, drove a Lamborghini, and he always kicked everybody's ass with no superpower.
That's so very
those,
true.
You know, I know it's kind of, it was a long winded, but those, no, I like that are, list. Those are my
I'm curious to Rick Ross. I want to hear Rick Ross. I want to hear.
Because every day I'm hustling. I'm Jose Hustle. Every day I'm hustling, you know, and that's what that year is where I got the moniker, got the name, got the whole persona. That hit, that Port of Miami album came out fall 2006.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the name Jose Hustle came about that same semester, you know, so that's driven, you know, Deion Sanders because he's a God-centered man.
Yeah.
He's Deion Sanders, and he's always primetime.
Primetime, that's right.
You know,
prime
he got time. Two personalities. I'm Rasheed Walker, and I'm Jose Hustle. Floyd Mayweather, you know, he's the best at what he does. He prepares, you know, so serious with everything. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, obviously, self-explanatory, obviously. You know. Right.
So, okay, we may come back to some of that, but let's talk about this thing that you created.
Like, oh, yeah.
You made something. And so I want to hear kind of the journey for you of like why and what was the just kind of walk us through a little bit of that.
So my dream was always growing up as a kid, my dream was to play in the NBA, be an NBA player. By the time I got to 10th, 11th grade, I realized that's not going to happen. You know, I caught it quickly. So I said,
"What?" So wait, before you go, but how did you know that? Like, did something happen?
That's what happened. I kept getting
so
cut.
So it was the 10th grade cut that cut you the deepest. That was the
well, you
that
know
was
what?
The
10th
cut.
Grade, 10th grade, I didn't get to try out because I had to get surgery on my nose. It was had polyps growing in my nose and starting to become cancerous. So I didn't get to try out that year. I had to get surgery.
Uh-huh.
But 11th grade, I was ready. I thought, you know, I went to Arizona. Went to a elite skills basketball camp. I was there with, who was there with? DeMar DeRozan, OJ Mayo. I was there with all of the top high school players from the West Coast that summer. So I went there, performed. I held my own.
Right.
So I come back. You know, I'm in prime, perfect shape, ready for tryouts. I thought I did well. And I got cut. And I realized, okay, it's not going to happen. You know, just, you know, try to shift it somewhere else. So I said I wanted to be an agent. No, I didn't want to go to law school. So my biggest dream was I wanted to play in the NBA. But, you know, growing up as a kid, the Nashville, it was like a pro-am that happened in Nashville. It wasn't called the Nashville Pro-Am, but it was a pro-am that was going on here in Nashville. Corey Allen, one of my mentors, that played at University of Tennessee,
right.
He would put it together. So a lot of our older players like Ron Mercer, Dante Jones, Matt Frege, Mario Moore, Charles Hathaway, a lot of greats that come from Nashville. They were playing it in the summer, and I would go.
Right.
And one of my uncles had a team. And granted, I didn't play no high school basketball, but I was on the team in a pro-am, and I would get in like maybe the last 2-3 minutes of the game.
Right.
And that was just an experience, and I noticed that the crowd was there, like the energy was in the building. It was just cool hangout, but it wasn't like a production like it is now. So I said, man, you know, since I didn't make it to the NBA, I want NBA players to come play with me.
Huh.
And, you know, that's where it came from. Because
wow.
As a kid growing up, seeing Pro-Am games, and then it just went away like in 2007. And I got the idea in late 2014. And then I just jumped out and did it in 2015. And so that's where it come, man. I just always wanted to be in basketball at a high level. And that's why I just said, man, I'm going to sink or swim. I'm going to try it, though.
Wow. So were there any key moments in you starting this that you can remember as you think back?
Okay, so this is back in 2014. I'm at my dad's house. Had like a little watch party. Had a couple people over there and watching the Heat versus Spurs finals. And I sit there I said, look, man, I'm going to bring the Pro-Am back next year. They were like, what? I said, yeah, I'm going to bring the Pro-Am back. Like, we're going to do it. I need y'all to play in it.
Yeah.
I said, man, just give me one game. If you like it, come back. If you don't, I understand. But I'm going to bring it back, and I'm going to do it bigger than nobody's ever done it.
Wow.
And it was like maybe 5 or 6 people over to watch the game. That's a key moment for me. And then the opening night, the first night, of the Pro-Am. It was on my birthday in 2015. And so that's how it worked out perfect. And we had an NBA player to come play the very first night. That's when I knew, I might be up to something. Wow. And that was my 26th birthday. I might be up to something. And the gym was packed. It was slam packed. And that was a defining moment, along with the initial birth of the idea.
Wow. Man, that's great. That's great.
Let me see. I don't mean to cut you off.
And no, then, that's good.
The 2019 Championship Sunday. One of the greatest basketball sequences of all time. It was Team Cash versus Slim and Husky. It's the first quarter. It's like maybe a minute left. It was like 18 straight points scored back to back. No misses. All contested shots.
Wow.
And it was like competitive atmosphere. And the crowd was going crazy. The floor was shaking. You know, I'm telling you, it was a stoppage of play because Slim and Huskies came down and hit a three and the crowd just went AWOL. People ran on the court. We had to stop the game, get people off the court. It's like 5 seconds left. And then Team Cash had got the ball. They inbounded. He took two dribbles, maybe one step past half court and put it up, bottom of the nets. And they went crazy again. So that was another big moment. So those are the three biggest moments in Pro-Am history. The birth of the idea, the very first game, and 2019 Championship Sunday.
Huh. And so now this is something that is you give a lot of your time to now. It's kind of like just the production, the recruiting, and all of that. And then there's another thing that you're doing now, right?
Yes.
It is called Hustle
Strong Foundation.
That's right. So what's that? Give us a picture to what that's all about.
Well, I've always, I've always been in tune with helping people. You know, I got this idea when I was in college. This was in 2010, because on Thanksgiving and Christmas, my mother would take me to the rescue mission to volunteer. It started like in 10th or 11th grade. So I would always volunteer. And I would always give clothes to the less fortunate people as well, whether it's my classmates or other kids in the neighborhood or just people that I got wind of that needed help or assistance. And, so I've always been big on helping. And then, I think right before I got into the car accident, I met Jeff Magruder. And he helped me put everything in motion with the foundation. He helped, tighten up the league, but most importantly, he helped me get the idea of Hustle Strong Foundation in motion to where it became a real thing. And we do a lot in the community, looking forward to doing even more going forward. But, whether it's financial help or mentorship or volunteering, community service, I've just been big on helping people. And like every year since 2016, I go to Vanderbilt medical center. I go to the trauma unit where I was at for 36 days, and I give refreshment bags to patients or family members of patients in the trauma unit and nurses as well. I started doing that the year of the accident, like December, 6 months later.
Wow.
After the accident, I want to give back because I know what you're going through. I've been there. I was on the trauma unit floor. I was in ICU, I was in step down, and I know what the family members are experiencing, mentally, emotionally and all that stuff. I'm just here to show you it's possible. You can, good news is on the way. Positive energy is on the way. If I can make it, and I had a 20% chance,
right?
Have faith that your patient will make it as well. And so I do that 3 times a year, holiday season in December,
right?
The date of the accident, and my birthday, June 22nd. And I just go give back. At this point, over 4 years, it's thousands of bags. I started with 36, then I went to 50, then I did 100, then I did 150, then 200, then 300, so I just like helping people. I like giving back, because I was blessed enough growing up to have mentors and leadership.
Right.
But the youth today, it's not as prevalent as it was when I was coming up, and everybody needs some guidance or leadership, or some people need help.
So why do you think some people don't do what you're doing, which is I've been given so much, right? Because we all, especially if you made it this far in life, have had people who have helped us along the way.
Right.
But you say, I'm giving it back. I had so much good come my way. I can't help but to give it back to other people. Well, and so why do you think that some people just can't get there?
Some people don't understand that what you put out in this world comes back to you, whether it's positive or negative or indifferent or whatever. And some don't, you know, I can't speak for others really. Some don't quite understand, but you know, I can't keep it. I can't hold it. I can't keep it all in.
Right.
You know, you get blessed with so much, you got to give some of it away.
Right.
You know, whether it's clothes, shoes, even money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying give your last, but you know, give. Yeah. You know, I live to serve. I live to give. Of course, I like earning and receiving, but that'll come. I've been blessed enough, man. I want to help bless others. I want to show the youth that, hey, man, when you do good things will come back to you. Do it, you know, organically and, you know, and genuine. It'll come and you'll get the good feeling of helping somebody. And, you know, that'll be more cherishable than anything that you could ever receive.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, let's go to I call it a speed round, but I guess it's not really a speed round. It's like a slow speed round. So a couple questions before we kind of wrap up our time here. So the first one that I like to ask people is, let's see, what are some of your few of your favorite quotes that you've heard in life? And maybe give us a little taste as to why the quote is one of your favorites.
Keep hustling, nobody cares. Meaning, like, keep going. Like, okay, you did that. You got to always remember, some people are proud of you. Some people really don't care. Just keep going. And that's one of my cousin Frank Walker, he gave me that quote.
Yeah.
Because what you did against the Packers, it's cool.
Right.
But when you got to play the Giants the next week, nobody cares what you did with the Packers. Keep hustling. Nobody cares. Keep going. Let me see another one. Yesterday's home runs don't win today's games.
Ooh.
You know, that's the same. True. That goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
What's another one? Be thankful.
Yeah.
That's straight to the point.
That's straight to the point.
Life can change in a second.
Right. Yes.
I know this firsthand. Yes. Be thankful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Okay. Albums everybody should listen to, in your opinion.
Ooh, 400 Degrees by Juvenile. That's number one.
Yes.
Reasonable Doubt by Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Teflon Don by Rick Ross. Let me see. Those are like three big ones. And I did a list of seven like a month ago.
Yeah.
Dirty Sprite 2 by Future.
Oh, okay. A little new. Something new.
Yeah. Yeah. Thriller by Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Man, that's probably the most that I can give you off the top of my head now. How You Love That Volume 2 by the Big Timers.
Ah.
Yeah. It's 1998.
Yes. Oh, I know. Oh, I remember. one or two books everyone should read.
48 Laws of Power.
Yeah.
That's one of them by Robert Greene.
Yeah.
What's the second book? Oh, let me see. The autobiography of Gucci Mane. That's another one. It was a book Joel Osteen wrote. He's written so many. Steve Harvey, Act and Think Like a Success.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Act and Think Like a Success. I read so many books, it's hard to kind of But those are my three big ones. And the reason why I say the autobiography of Gucci Mane, because not because I'm a big fan,
right?
But it's like a real life eye-opening, eye-opening. He's sharing parts of his life that even big fans like myself didn't know, and he's speaking in a very humble manner.
Okay, and then if you had to leave Nashville forever, like you had to leave, you can't come back, what are going to be some of the spots that you go to one last time?
You got to go to the Nashville Pro-Am on Sundays. You got to go there first.
I got to go there first. That's on Sunday.
Yeah, you got to go to Slim and Husky's pizza spot.
Yeah.
You got to go
and
there.
Get what? What are you going to get?
Oh, I mean, you know, you pick your own pizza.
But what are you going to get?
I go get... I get a Husky. If this is going to be my last, I got to get a Husky.
Yeah.
Spicy red on the sauce. Spinach. The...
You lost me on spinach, but I'm
yeah,
I'm
but
here
see, this
you.
Is... You gotta,
this is you. This you is
you. Add a little flavor to it.
A little flavor, okay.
The house cheese.
Yeah.
Spicy pepperoni with pineapples.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's it. You got to go to Prince's Hot Chicken. The one on U and Lane is done for, but they got one, you know,
Nolensville
Road.
Yeah.
You got to go to Princess Hot Chicken, walk down Broadway, see the lights.
Yeah.
And then I will go to my brother's barbershop in North Nashville. You got to get a fresh haircut before I go.
Wow.
That's the last, but I mean, if I got to leave forever.
Yeah. You got to go do it.
Nashville Pro-Am. That's the biggest thing going on in the summer, Thursdays and Sundays. Slim and Husky, the best pizza in Nashville. Prince's Hot Chicken, the best hot chicken in Nashville.
Yeah.
And Creations Unlimited Barbershop, one of the best barbershops in Nashville. You know, so.
You gotta do it.
That'll really close it out for me if I had to leave for good.
You gotta leave for good. That's good. Brother, thank you. This
Man,
was great.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I brought you something. I brought you.
Oh.
Hustle Strong shirt.
Yes.
You know, that's from the foundation.
Yes.
And the hustle stands for how you survive through life every day. And that's what, you know, that's the hustle. And Jose Hustle and the hustle and Hustle Strong. And yes. Some rubber bands for the Nashville Pro-Am. And you got the gray and you got the green.
Ooh.
And the green represents positive energy.
Oh, yeah. I like that. That's great. Hey, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'll see you. Thanks.